Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Music of John Williams from one of the many iconic film scores that he's composed, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. In a career that spans more than 50 years, John Williams has authored a vast catalog of music for screen, stage, symphony, and even sport. Williams has garnered 51 Academy Award nominations for his memorable film scores, including Jaws, Jurassic Park, Superman, Star Wars, three of the Harry Potter films, and Schindler's List. The Long Island native, who turned 86 earlier this year, has won 5 Academy Awards, 4 Golden Globes, and 24 Grammys. This weekend, the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra will be screening Raiders of the Lost Ark and performing the score at the Meyerhoff under the direction of BSO Pops conductor Jack Everly, who joins me in the studio. It's good to see you, sir.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
You and I have had lots of fun working together when I was the music director of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. I'm delighted that you're back in town. You are an absolute expert in the history of film, the history of Hollywood films. You and I have even done some concerts with music from some of the great Hollywood classics. How does John Williams stand up in the panoply of, you know, the history of film music?
Oh, it's funny because he's 86, as you mentioned, and yet he's composing. He doesn't ever want to stop, thank goodness. And he's really of the golden age. You think of Steiner, Rozsa, Korngold, you have to think of John Williams. He started off, as you know, as a pianist, a jazz pianist, and arranger. Some of those early LPs have been reissued, and I just heard some of those arrangements, and they're spectacular. And then he worked his way from television into Hollywood's film studios. His original scores for Checkmate are jazz-influenced, and so when you think of the scores, the iconic scores that he has written, you certainly may not think jazz, Catch Me If You Can, perhaps, but there's the symphonic language that he has developed, which is truly for all time. It's his legacy. And as we were talking about earlier today, couldn't be a nicer man on the planet, a gracious human being.
That's for sure. When I was a graduate student of music in Boston, he was very gracious to me and my colleagues who were young, aspiring conductors, invited us into his rehearsals with the Boston Pops. He succeeded Arthur Fiedler in that job, you know, did wonderful work with them. It's interesting. I remember reading a quote from John Lennon once, who said, "You could take any piece of film and put any music to it, and it will make the film better." It's like you could do it randomly, you know? And there's something to be said for that. However, film music now is an art form that people are studying in particular. I mean, it never used to be something that was taught in conservatories when I was there, you know, 40 years ago. But boy, people are understanding now this is an art form whose time has come. We may be in the halcyon age of film music now.
I think you have a point there. You know, there was that original golden age in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And I think John has brought us back to another golden age with his symphonic scores. They're being played, as we know, with the film being projected these days in concert halls. Every orchestra on the planet is doing this because it's great composition and there are huge audiences for it. And that is a boon to all symphony orchestras everywhere.
Yeah. Tell me about the logistics of this, because I've actually never seen one. I've conducted one movie with a live score. It's a piece by a guy in New York named Richard Einhorn called Voices of Light. It's about Joan of Arc. And I know the coordinating the live music with the film, which doesn't stop when you want it to. It doesn't get faster when you want it to. It doesn't get slower when you want it to. It's complicated. How do you keep a live symphony orchestra in sync with these iconic movies? Yeah. I mean, is this like asking David Copperfield to explain how the magic is done? I don't know.
There are different ways of doing it. Sometimes there's a click track, and most often the musicians would rather not hear that in their ear because all night long, if what they hear is, it drives them crazy. So you do that. You wear that as a conductor and a little earpiece, and that hopefully guides you. And then what you see on your video monitor are streamers that go across from left to right that are various colors that tell you what to prepare for, what to look for. And in the middle, there are punches, and there are little round splashes that last for about half a frame, and they tell you where you are. On top of that, your score has measure numbers, of course, and every single measure has a number, and you know where you're supposed to be. So those are the various ways, visually and aurally with the click, you can coordinate a film. Another way, many of the musicals are put out wherein you have a video of the film on one side. On the other side, an actual video of an analog clock. And the second hand, of course, is moving. And you have marked in your score, because you've studied this for 2 or 3 months, where what second on that clock you're supposed to be with the score. They're very different ways of coordinating. And you haven't lived until you've tried to coordinate Singing in the Rain and American in Paris and The Wizard of Oz with just a second hand going around.
Yeah. So if you end up a little before where you're supposed to be, can you slow down? And if you're a little ahead of where you're supposed to be, can you speed up? How's that work?
Well, the musicians must be with you, and they understand that. That's part of the miracle of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. They get it. They know they have to ebb and flow, and that it'll be slightly different every night, because this mass of incredible musicians take you somewhere. It morphed a little bit. And when it's not a musical, it's a little bit easier. If it is a musical, especially one of the classic musicals, the editing sometimes is very strange, and we don't know it as we listen to it, but Ray Bolger really does speed up and slow down a lot when he's singing If I Only Had a Brain. And you have to go with that. And here you're trying to do a pulse and keep it normal sounding.
And it's one thing to do that with an artist who's standing next to you on the stage.
Right.
And you can breathe together and you can look at each other's eyes and you can feel it. But it's a whole other thing to do with a taped Ray Bolger.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. The harder things to do are ballets on film, because then the musicians don't hear anyone singing. They don't know where the phrase is going, and they have to trust. And I must say, that's why I'm very lucky to have had 14 years of American Ballet Theater under my belt. If you can accompany a dancer live on stage, you can still accompany a film. And when you get to an American in Paris ballet, there's 17 minutes of good luck.
Yeah.
And following Leslie Caron and Gene Kelly and all that.
Yeah, because it's an amazing thing. It's not like, if you're going to conduct a Brahms symphony, it's you, the score, and the orchestra, right? And that's exactly a relatively straightforward endeavor.
Yeah.
But boy, you got all these other things going on. It's a crowded thing in your brain there.
I like to say to the musicians, and it'll be different every night.
Yeah.
Because they have to remember that even though the film is the same, the way we play it is slightly different.
And the POPS programs that you've put together for us here in Baltimore, for Indianapolis, which is your home orchestra, for the orchestra you work with in Ottawa, all around the country, you do the big July 4th thing from the lawn and in Washington every year. You're putting together really beautifully constructed evenings of great entertainment. When you have a movie like this, obviously you get this second level of intellectual stimulation, because you're seeing and hearing a live symphony orchestra in the hall. It's very different than hearing it in the movie theater, right?
Oh, of course. We've had one of the most gratifying things is when I did about a year ago Harry Potter, the first film, Harry Potter, we received letters from parents saying, well, we read the books together, our children. First of all, I read them, and then I grew up and had children, and then we read them together, and then I brought the children to the symphony orchestra to see the film and hear the orchestra. And now they want to practice their instruments, they want to know all about the symphony orchestra, and now they're just as fascinated with the music aspect of it as they were with the story aspect of Harry Potter. Boy, that's a win-win situation.
Yeah, and when you realize how beautifully the music magnifies and elevates and illuminates what you're seeing on the stage, what you're hearing the actors say, it's quite an experience. So this really is becoming a portal for young people to enjoy classical music.
Definitely.
Yeah. And that's a big part of everybody's job these days in the classical music business, is it not?
Yeah. To find all of those demographics and get them into the concert halls. This is the legacy of one of the grandest cultures possible. And that's why it's a good thing. Bring the kids. They can learn. They can feel. They can have a fun time as well.
Good to see you, sir. And break a leg this weekend.
Thank you, Tom.
Jack Everly is the principal pops conductor of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra. He'll be leading the BSO this weekend as they perform John Williams' wonderful score to Raiders of the Lost Ark at the Meyerhof tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon. By the way, John Williams himself will be conducting the BSO in a concert on June 13th. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday, we check in with Erica Bridgeford, one of the founders of Baltimore Ceasefire. Also on the program, former Maryland Congresswoman Connie Morella and former Indiana Congressman Tim Romer on how to fix our current politics. Thanks to Bottoms Up Bagels for lunch today. They're a small-batch pop-up bagel shop preparing hand-rolled New Jersey-style bagels, house-cured lox, and specialty cream cheeses. Inspired by traditions of bagel making dating back to the 1940s, you can find them at the Waverly and JFX Farmers Markets and online at bottomsupbagels.com. Midday's team includes the daughters of Barbara Dreyer, Dolores Greaves, Nancy Cahill, and Gail Williams, plus the sons of Ellen Spicknall, Doris Sivak, and Margaret Northam. I'm Rosemary Hall's Rotten Kid. Happy Mother's Day, Mom, to you and to all moms. Have a great weekend.